to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Some Sounds of Arizona. And let's begin today's reading with a feature that's entitled Indiana Hoops Heartland finally has another shot at the title. And this feature written by Jeff Zilgit, columnist for USA Today. Sigh of relief, exhale of joy. Probably a bit of both for the Indiana Pacers, and the percentage of relief versus joy depends on the person. No matter how one dissects the emotion, the Pacers did what they needed to do and eliminated the New York Knicks with a 125-108 victory in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals, May 31st. Indiana avoided a Game 7 at Madison Square Garden in New York and bypassed the prospect of blowing a 3-1 series lead in advancing to the NBA Finals for the first time since the year 2000. To be able to win the series the way that we did today at home in front of our fans is huge, Pacers coach Rick Carlisle said. You never want to go back on the road in Game 7, and so we are grateful. We're grateful for a lot of things today, unquote. Indiana has never won an NBA championship. It lost to the Lakers in 6 games in the year 2000 and won 3 ABA titles in 1970, 1972, and 1973. It joined the NBA in 1976. The Pacers have had quality squads with Larry Brown, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, Carlisle, and Frank Vogel coaching. But until last weekend, only Bird, with Reggie Miller starring on the court, took the Pacers to the finals. Owner Herb Simon has been an outstanding steward. Despite no championship for the franchise, the Pacers have been a competitive and mid-small market team for decades. They've had fewer than 35 victories only 4 times since the year 1990. It's a small market dream, in part due to the NBA's collective bargaining agreement with players that aim to give more teams the opportunity to compete for a title, if well managed. Indiana and Oklahoma City are exactly that. This Pacers squad earned this finals appearance, beating the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo in the first round, number one seed Cleveland Cavaliers and their All-Stars in the second round, and then dismissed New York, Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. That is an impressive run for a number four seed. Of course, that four seed is not representative of how the Pacers finished the season after starting the year 10 wins, 15 losses. From January 1st through the end of the regular season, the Pacers were one of the best teams. They had the fourth most victories, the number seven offense, the number nine defense, and the number six net rating. As Cleveland Cavaliers coach Kenny Atkinson pointed out multiple times, quote, they press for 48 minutes and they run faster than anybody in the league. We have the data, unquote. The Pacers have the personnel, starters, and reserves to play that style. Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam are all-stars. In Game 6, Siakam had 31 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, and a steal, earning the Conference Finals MVP award. Halliburton had 21 points, 13 assists, 6 rebounds, and 3 steals, his ninth double-double in 16 playoff games. They went 10 deep against the Knicks and regularly beat them down the court for open shots. And they made three-pointers, 17 for 33 in a closeout game while holding the Knicks to 28% shooting on threes. It's a special time to be a Pacers fan and to be part of this organization, Halliburton said. And we just have great people in that locker room, from our players to our coaches, to our support staff, to our ball boys, to everybody that is a part of this. So it's a really special feeling. And I could ramble and ramble and ramble, and I probably am right now, but I just think that I cannot put into words how special this group is and how much this means to us. We're going to enjoy it for the night and then as a group come together and get ready for what's in front of us. What's in front of us is the first of four, and we understand that we've got a big challenge in front of us, unquote. In 2.5 decades, Coach Carlisle, in his second stint with the Pacers after 13 seasons with the Dallas Mavericks that yielded a title in 2011, has proven himself one of the NBA's best coaches, adapting to different eras, styles, and personnel. As he has gotten older and wiser, he has ceded control, allowing a star like Halliburton to run the offense without Carlisle dictating every possession. The reward for winning the East? A finals matchup against the Oklahoma City Thunder, the best team in the league. This is no time to be popping champagne, Carlisle said. And when you get to this point of the season, it's two teams and it's one goal. And so it becomes an all-or-nothing thing. And we understand the magnitude of the opponent. Oklahoma City has been dominant all year long, with capital letters in the word dominant defensively, unquote. The Pacers are underdogs, but with the Knicks behind them, they're not just relieved or overjoyed to be there. And again, that feature entitled Indiana Hoops Heartland finally has another shot at the NBA title, written by Jeff Zilgit, columnist for USA Today. And in other news from the NBA and the upcoming NBA Finals, the next headline reads, Who Has the Edge in Thunder versus Pacers? This feature written by Justin Martinez of The Oklahoman. The OKC Thunder will face the Indiana Pacers in the 2025 NBA Finals. Oklahoma City won both regular season games against Indiana by an average 13 points. Both are searching for their first NBA championship. Here is a complete breakdown of the Thunder-Pacers matchup. Starting with backcourt starters. Tyrese Halliburton is playing some of his best basketball right now. The 25-year-old guard is averaging 18.8 points and 9.8 assists this postseason, and he continues to deliver in big moments. He's the engine of Indiana's high-octane offense, but OKC will make life difficult for Halliburton. From Lu Dort to Alex Caruso to Jalen Williams to Cason Wallace, the Thunder will apply constant pressure from start to finish. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should have an easier time getting into a rhythm, though. Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard are good defenders, but they'll have their hands full when guarding the league's most valuable player. I expect Gilgeous Alexander to be the best player in this series. Give the point to OKC, Edge Thunder. Next, from backcourt, we move to the frontcourt starters. After a shaky second-round series against Denver, Williams bounced back in the Western Conference Finals. The 24-year-old forward showed why he landed on the All-NBA third team. Williams averaged 22.2 points and 6.6 rebounds on 49% shooting from the field and 46% shooting from deep. OKC also has Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein in the front court. The 7-foot duo can space the floor, pass, and protect the rim. Indiana has a strong front court of its own. Nesmith has become a two-way threat. Pascal Siakam is a reliable scorer with championship experience, and Miles Turner is a strong shot blocker. But I'm giving the slight edge to OKC. From shot creation to defensive versatility to size, the Thunder check off all the boxes. Edge, Thunder. From there, let's go to bench production. Both teams have relied on their depth to get to this stage. OKC's second unit is led by Caruso. The one-time champion is playing elite defense this postseason, as usual, but he is also shooting a blistering 41.5% from deep. Then there's Wallace, another stout defender who can swing the momentum of a game. And if OKC finds itself in a shootout this series, players such as Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe can catch fire. The Pacers also have plenty of options off the bench. T.J. McConnell is a veteran floor general. Obi Toppin is electric in transition. And Benedict Mathurin is a microwave scorer. I'm giving the point to OKC, though. While the Pacers' bench mostly provides a spark with its offense, the Thunder's bench is more capable of impacting the game on both ends of the floor. Edge, Thunder. Then there's coaching. This series will be a chess match between two of the top coaches in the NBA. Mark Dagano led OKC to a franchise best record of 68 wins, 14 losses during the regular season, and he found success with various lineup combinations while key players such as Holmgren and Hartenstein missed time. He is an excellent defensive strategist, which has helped the Thunder slow down the likes of Nikola Jokic and Anthony Edwards this postseason. Rick Carlisle was also known for his stingy defenses going all the way back to his time with Detroit in the early 2000s. But he has shown an ability to adjust to his personnel throughout the years, and he has now helped create Indiana's elite offense. Deciding the winner of this category is tough, but I'm going with Carlisle because of his experience. He has won 83 playoff games throughout his 23 seasons as a head coach, which ranks 10th in NBA history. Carlisle also won a championship with Dallas in the 2010-2011 season. And while that was over a decade ago, he is more familiar with this stage than Dagano. Edge, Pacers. And finally, when looking at the area of intangibles, OKC is the better team on paper, but Indiana is on a special run right now. The Pacers have completed 4 17-point comebacks this postseason. That is the most by any team in a single playoff run since the year 1998. Indiana has also pulled off 3 7-point comebacks in the final minute this postseason. There have been only 4 other comebacks of that nature in the NBA since 1998. The Pacers can't be counted out, not when they're playing like this. So the edge here for the Intangibles goes to the Pacers. And again, that feature is entitled Who Has the Edge in Thunder vs. Pacers, written by Justin Martinez of The Oklahoman. And from NBA playoff news, let's move now to NHL playoff news. Stanley Cup Final. The headline reads, Panthers new standard for success in the NHL. And this feature written by Tom D'Angelo of the Palm Beach Post. Silly superstitions. In one arena, the Florida Panthers stayed as far away from the trophy signifying their Eastern Conference Championship, the Prince of Wales Championship, shunning the shiny 2-foot-tall piece of sterling silver as it was brought onto the ice after their Game 5 win over Carolina. In another venue nearly 2,000 miles away in Dallas, the Edmonton Oilers surrounded their trophy, the Clarence S. Campbell Bowl, after eliminating the Stars of Dallas in the Western Conference Final in 5 games, each player making sure that his fingerprints were all over the prize. While both teams will acknowledge that the job is not done as they prepare for a rematch of the 2024 Stanley Cup Final, last year's result dictates this year's superstition. The Florida Panthers, after touching the Prince of Wales trophy 2 years ago and then being smoked by the Las Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final, ignored it a year ago before winning their first title. Aside from being a talented, connected, determined bunch, you can describe this team as having long memories. Because even during the team photo after the Game 5 clincher, at least a 1-foot gap separated the trophy from the nearest players, including Captain Alexander Barkov. The Oilers avoided the Clarence S. Campbell Bowl a year ago, and that did not work out very well. Edmonton dug too deep a hole, falling behind Florida 3-0 before a furious rally fell one game short, losing Game 7 in Sunrise. The bigger picture has changed for our team, Panthers coach Paul Maurice said after the 5-3 win over the Hurricanes that closed out the conference final in 5 games. Quote, the first time, and you fight to get to the final, it's just such a big deal. And then when you do it a couple of times, you understand 3/4 of the way through the playoffs, and there's lots more that has to happen. Unquote. Like any franchise that tastes success the way that the Panthers have the past 3 years, expectations are heightened. Matthew Tkachuk said just making the final 2 years ago felt like such an accomplishment from where we were at one point. The Panthers had won one playoff series the previous 27 years before losing that 2023 postseason that ended with losing the final round in 5 games. Then it happened. First, a Stanley Cup final run that gives you that taste. Then, using that experience to complete the mission for the first time. And now, headed back for the 3rd straight year. We didn't come here to win the Eastern Conference, Barkov said. Florida not only has crossed that threshold of just being happy to be there, it has raised that bar so high that suggesting making the Stanley Cup Final should be cause for great celebration is an insult. It's an odd feeling, said forward Brad Marchand, whose acquisition at the trade deadline, along with obtaining defenseman Seth Jones, should seal the General Manager of the Year award for Florida's Bill Zito. Excited to win the East, but our job is not done, he said. Dynasty? Not quite. A franchise needs to carry sustained success for more than 3 or 4 years and win more than 1 or 2 titles to join such an exclusive group of teams like the Canadiens or the Yankees, Celtics, and Patriots. But it has to start somewhere, and with the leadership of owner Vinny Viola and Zito, the Panthers at least now can initiate that conversation. They're the standard, obviously, Carolina coach Rod Brind'Amour said about the Panthers after his team was eliminated. The Panthers are the 9th franchise to play in 3 consecutive Stanley Cup finals, 2nd in the past 40 years, joining the 2020 to 2022 Tampa Bay Lightning. Franchises not on that list include 3 of the league's original 6, Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks, New York Rangers. They are attempting to become the 3rd team this century to win back-to-back titles. The first 2 were the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2016 and 2017, and the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2020 and 2021. The beauty of this Stanley Cup final is nobody is coming into it wide-eyed and overwhelmed. The moment should not be too big for either team. The fact that we have a rematch of a 7-game series evens out the experience and the wow factor. It's not our first rodeo with this, Tkachuk said. We are going to be very prepared, unquote. And expect the same from the Edmonton Oilers. And again, that feature entitled Panthers' New Standard for Success in the NHL, written by Tom D'Angelo of the Palm Beach Post. And in another feature on the Stanley Cup Final, this one's entitled Panthers versus Oilers, Same Teams, Plenty of Intrigue, written by Mike Bream of USA Today. The defending champion Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers are meeting for the 2nd consecutive year in the Stanley Cup Final. Same old, right? Not quite. Although the core players, coaches, and goaltenders are the same, both teams have made important additions, most notably the Panthers. They were aggressive at the trade deadline, adding all-star forward Brad Marchand and defenseman Seth Jones to join their off-season depth acquisitions. The Oilers have surrounded their stars with a few different depth players, and the team has honed its defensive game. It's going to be an incredible battle again, said Panthers forward Sam Reinhart, who scored last season's series-clinching goal. Here's what's intriguing about the Stanley Cup Final. First, last year's final was exciting. It didn't start that way, with the Panthers taking a 3-0 series lead and needing one more victory to clinch their first championship. But the Oilers didn't make it easy. They crushed the Panthers 8-1 in Game 4 and scored 5 goals in both Games 5 and 6 to tie the series. Just when it seemed that the Panthers might be reeling, they found their way again in Game 7 and picked up a 2-1 victory for the title. Next question, can Connor McDavid win his first title? The Oilers star has become the NHL's best player after he was drafted number 1 overall back in 2015. Three MVPs, five scoring titles, one goal title, seven All-Star appearances, the game-winning goal in the Four Nations face-off. The only thing missing is a Stanley Cup ring. He came close last year. He broke Wayne Gretzky's NHL record with 34 assists in a playoff year and totaled 42 points. That made him a rare Conn Smythe Trophy winner, which is the playoff MVP, from the losing team, but he stayed with his teammates rather than accept the individual award. That Game 7 loss has driven him and the team. He's leading the league in playoff assists and points again, and had a crucial goal in the series clincher against the Dallas Stars. One question being asked, will Canada's Stanley Cup drought finally end? No Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup since the 1993 Montreal Canadiens. A Canadian team has been to the final eight times since then, including this year. The Oilers pushed the series to seven games in their last two visits. Edmonton won the Stanley Cup five times in 1984, 85, 87, 88, and 1990 before the Canada drought began. If Edmonton doesn't win, then the Florida Panthers can achieve dynasty status. The state of Florida has become a hockey hotbed, with the Tampa Bay Lightning reaching the final from 2020 to 2022, winning the first 2 years, and the Panthers reaching from 2023 to 2025. Win a second consecutive title, and the Panthers' dynasty talk could start. They are deep and have multiple-time All-Star Marchand on the third line. It might be hard to keep the team together because Sam Bennett, Marchand, Aaron Ekblad, and others are pending unrestricted free agents, and goalie Sergei Bobrovsky has one more year left on his deal. But the salary cap is going up, giving the Panthers flexibility. And rematch doesn't mean the same result. The Detroit Red Wings beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in 2008, and the Penguins returned the favor the following year to give Sidney Crosby his first title. The same thing happened in 1983 and 1984. The New York Islanders swept the Oilers for their fourth title in a row, but Edmonton won in 1984 as Wayne Gretzky and company began their dynasty. And both coaches are masterful. Florida's Paul Maurice has made the final in his first three seasons with the Panthers, while Edmonton's Chris Knobloch has done it in his first two seasons as an NHL head coach. Both are strong at adjustments. Witness how last year's series had such wild swings. Those adjustments have continued this year. Maurice switched out his fourth line after losing the first two games in the second round before his team won in seven games. Knobloch benched Skinner to give the goalie a chance to reset. Both coaches are highly quotable. And finally, you will see many of these players at the Olympics. Nine Panthers took part in the Four Nations face-off, with Matthew Tkachuk of the USA, Bennett, Marchand, and Reinhardt of Canada, Barkov and others from Finland, and Gustav Forsling of Sweden leading the way. Edmonton had three players led by Canada's McDavid. Draisaitl will play for Germany in 2026, and other players from these teams could make the Olympics. And again, that feature, entitled Panthers versus Oilers. Same teams, plenty of intrigue. Written by Mike Bream of USA Today. And from hockey news, let's turn now to some baseball news. This next feature is entitled, How an Ex-Major League Baseball Player Learned That Dad Was a Legend. Written by Bob Nightingale of USA Today. Dateline Los Angeles. Eric Anthony was always curious, but never obsessed to learn the family secret. He grew up asking his mother about the identity of his biological father, but always received vague answers, saying it was a man who was briefly stationed at a San Diego naval base. It really didn't matter. Anthony was surrounded by love in the family, with three brothers, food on the table, clothes in the closet, and a ball field nearby. He was a star baseball player growing up in San Diego, drafted in 1986 by the Houston Astros, making his major league debut 3 years later, and spending 9 years in the big leagues. He led the Astros with 19 home runs and finished second with 80 RBIs in 1992 on a star-studded team that featured Hall of Famers Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio, along with Ken Caminiti, Steve Finley, and Luis Gonzalez. It wasn't until 8 years ago, October 10, 2017 to be exact, that his oldest daughter, Erica, asked him if he would do a genealogy test. She goes, "Dad, I've been watching some of these Ancestry DNA commercials," Anthony tells USA Today Sports. She's always been curious who was on both sides of the family. "I spit in the bottle, sent out the DNA, and when it came back, I started getting all of these Davises showing up in my profile. I had to investigate," unquote. He made a series of calls and wound up contacting a woman who showed up as one of the Davis relatives in Phoenix named Martha Burt Sells. He identified himself, and they figured out together that they were cousins. Anthony explained his background and sent pictures of him in his baseball uniform where he played for the Astros, Mariners, Reds, Rockies, and Dodgers, when Sells stopped him cold. Quote, "Oh, so you're the second most famous baseball player in our family," said Sells, who discovered 2 years earlier in a DNA test that her biological father and Davis's mother were brother and sister. "Who's the first?" Anthony said. "Well, my first cousin," Sells said. "Willie Davis." "Yes, that Willie Davis." "My wife Googled him," Anthony said, "and then she started screaming, 'Oh my God, that's your father.'" "Yes, the two-time All-Star, three-time Gold Glove winner, and two-time World Series champion with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He still holds the Dodgers franchise records for hits and triples since their move to Los Angeles. His 31-game hitting streak still remains the all-time Dodgers record since moving to Los Angeles. "I grew up loving Wally Moon and Duke Snyder, and then Willie Davis came along," said Dodgers All-Star outfielder Rick Monday, who grew up in Santa Monica and became the first player selected in the history of the Major League Baseball draft in 1965. Quote, "Being a center fielder, I watched Willie Davis really close because I was in awe of the way he ran after a ball and the way he ran the bases. His strides, he was like an antelope. He just devoured ground with every long stride that he took, unquote. Said Dusty Baker, who grew up in Riverside and won a World Series with the 1981 Dodgers, quote, "We all wanted to be Willie Davis. He ran like a gazelle the way that he would fly around the bases. We all tried to imitate him. We thought that he was the coolest dude ever," unquote. Oh, could Davis run? He twice led the National League in triples. He stole 398 career bases, including 42 in 1964, and stole three bases in one game during the 1965 World Series. He was nicknamed Three Dog with his blazing speed. "He was such an important part of Dodger history," said former general manager Fred Clair, who spoke at Davis's memorial service back in 2010. "He was so full of life, with such high energy, and so extremely talented. Nothing was too big for him. There was no intimidation. Great speed, a very good arm. No one ran from first to third like Willie. Three steps between bags. What an athlete," unquote. Eric Anthony, now age 57, couldn't believe it. Everyone always wanted to know where he got his athleticism. Why did he gravitate towards baseball and not another sport? Why did everything seem so natural to him as a left-handed hitter? And, of course, why didn't his mother ever tell him the truth? Quote, "She could never give me a detailed answer," Anthony said. "You don't want to disrespect your parents, just one of those things that I kept inside. I thought maybe one day I would find out, and I did," unquote. Anthony confronted his mom, Jo Carol Ener Phillips, who died at the age of 82 in February, and she confirmed his dad indeed was Davis. She certainly didn't mean any harm in keeping the secret. She was a proud woman. She wasn't looking for a handout from a baseball star. She was just fine raising four boys by herself. "I wasn't angry with my mom, nor was I angry with Willie," said Anthony, who retired from baseball in the year 2001 after also playing in Japan and Mexico. "I think my mother was protecting all of us from any scandal and did the best thing for all parties involved. She was protecting me, and she was protecting Willie," unquote. Anthony's oldest brother, Michael Phillips, now age 66, knows that while Eric is now at peace, he cannot hide the desire to have known when Davis was still alive. "My mom was private as Eric, but she wanted to keep it away from everyone," Phillips said. "She was devastated that Eric found out the way he did. There was some tension there. It took a few weeks. I can't imagine it happening to me. Willie Davis being your actual father, that's a little bit of a shocker," unquote. Anthony discovered that few people ever knew the identity of his father. Anthony, who lives in Houston with his wife Robin, met Thomas Davis, who is Willie Davis's older brother and still lives in Los Angeles and struggles with his brother's death. They met in a Mexican restaurant in Irvine, California. They shared pictures and gasped at the resemblance. He couldn't believe how warmly he was embraced. Quote, "My uncle grabbed me and hugged me," Anthony said, and he said, "You're giving me a piece of my little brother back." Of course, it was a shock to that side of the family at first, since Willie was married. "I was a love child, but now it's like one big family," unquote. The family started reminiscing, and Anthony was reminded by his brother that Davis actually was at their house. In those days, everyone in the neighborhood were San Diego Padres fans. And when Davis was traded before the 1976 season to the Padres, he became a household name. I remember there was this beautiful blue Corvette parked outside our apartment one afternoon, Phillips said. And a kid runs up to me and says, "Why is Willie Davis at your house?" I ran upstairs, and there he was, sitting on the couch. I didn't even put two and two together until later. I started playing everything back in my head. "Oh my God, that's why he was at the house," unquote, said Anthony. So it looks like I did meet him twice. That day, and when my mom took me to watch the Dodgers play the Padres when I was 2 years old, unquote. Anthony has since tried to learn as much about Davis as possible, collecting old photographs, jerseys, hats, magazine covers, everything relating to his dad. He has a small shrine to Davis at his Houston home. When Eric reached and told me about the connection, Claire said, "I wanted to put Eric in touch with players that knew Willie. I reached out to Tommy Davis, Maury Wills, and others. I wanted to give him the opportunity to know as much as he could about his dad. I sent him pictures that I had of Willie. He was quite fascinated by it," unquote. Anthony began sharing his discovery with Baker and his former Dodgers manager, Bill Russell, who also played with Davis. He remembers the day that he telephoned his close friend, actor Kenny Medlock, whom he met in 1992, to share his discovery. Medlock played 9 years in the minor leagues before going Hollywood, appearing in 55 movies, including Moneyball. It was Medlock who telephoned Dodgers hitting coach Reggie Smith one day to recommend Anthony. Quote, "You talk about going full circle," Medlock said. "I met Willie Davis, got him into a bunch of movies, meet Eric, get Eric a job with the Dodgers, and then find out that Willie is his biological dad. When Eric told me that that was his father, it was just such a bombshell. I mean, this guy was special. He heard a different drummer drumming. He was not somebody you could control. He would have probably been a hippie if he wasn't a baseball player," unquote. Anthony, who started his own technology company, relishes hearing from his father's old friends and acquaintances. He loves hearing the stories, especially from Davis's brother, Thomas. Thomas told him that Willie's first love was basketball, but it was Dodgers scout Kenny Myers who saw his blazing speed as a track and field star and was the one who converted him into a left-hand hitting outfielder, just like Anthony. "Eric is a very quiet guy. He doesn't say much," Phillips said. "But I think Eric finding out about his father is a turning moment in his life. It's important just for Eric to understand what happened. He's still in the fog, but in a euphoric way. This will help bring some closure and some openings, too," unquote. Now that Anthony knows that Davis is his father, he would love to honor his legacy by correcting a wrong. Strangely, Davis has never appeared on a single Hall of Fame ballot, not on the Baseball Writers Association of America ballot, not on a Veterans Committee ballot. Davis, who accumulated 2,561 hits and stole 384 bases to go along with his three Gold Glove awards, has the highest career WAR at 60.7, never to appear on a Hall of Fame ballot. The 1985 ballot included 41 players, with Lou Brock and Catfish Hunter each elected in their first year of eligibility. But Davis never appeared despite his over 2,500 hits, 398 stolen bases, and 182 home runs. He's one of only 10 players in baseball history who has achieved those numbers, and 7 are in the Hall of Fame. Willie has not been given the respect that he deserves in his career, Anthony said. Look what he has done. He ranks first in all-time hits in Los Angeles Dodgers history. He helped them win 2 World Series titles. It's just baffling to me that he never appeared on a Hall of Fame ballot, unquote. The biggest hindrance to Davis's candidacy is in his first year of eligibility in 1985. 11 players who had been previously dropped off the ballot were reinstated by a special committee that year. They added Dick Allen, Ken Boyer, Clay Carroll, Ron Fairley, Curt Flood, Harvey Haddix, Denny McClain, Dave McNally, Veda Pinson, Ron Santo, and Wilbur Wood, dramatically reducing the first-year eligible players. I mean, at the very least, Anthony said, he should have his number retired by the Dodgers. Nobody should be wearing number 3 again, unquote. The last Dodger to wear number 3 is Chris Taylor, who was released on May the 18th. Anthony cannot help but wonder, too, if his baseball career might have been different if he had known Davis was his father. What if Davis had reached out and accepted him as his son while he was growing up? They lived only 100 miles away from each other, with Davis in Los Angeles and Anthony in San Diego, later playing for the same team 24 years apart. Just how cool would it have been to have father-son pictures at Dodger Stadium? Quote, I often think about that, having my father in my life, Anthony said. This guy was a major league legend, no way around it. To have a conversation with him, asking him certain questions, and to have that knowledge and experience, I'm sure it would have improved my career. I wish I would have had my dad around, but you can't be stuck in life with what-ifs. I have a new brother, 2 sisters, and a host of uncles and aunts. My life is complete. It's like being on a deserted island all of these years, and then somebody found you. I know who I am now, unquote. And again, that feature is entitled How X Major League Baseball Player Learned That Dad Was Legend, written by Bob Nightingale of USA Today. And in other baseball news, the Pittsburgh Pirates are flatly rebuking all interest from teams wanting to engage in trade talks for ace pitcher Paul Skenes, but will listen to offers on every other player but him and outfielder O'Neill Cruz. 2 intriguing players are third baseman Ke'Bryan Hayes and outfielder Brian Reynolds. They were each expected to become cornerstone pieces of the Pirates franchise, and both have struggled, with the Pirates expected to put them on the market at the trade deadline. Reynolds is in the third year of an 8-year, $106 million deal, the largest in club history, while Hayes is in the fourth year of an 8-year, $70 million extension. Then the Miami Marlins plan to enhance ace Sandy Alcantara's trade value by hanging on to him until the deadline has backfired, at least in the early going. Alcantara, whose returning from Tommy John surgery, is yielding a hideous 8.47 ERA, allowing the most earned runs of any pitcher in baseball. And the Arizona Diamondbacks are resisting any urge to make a rash move and dismiss manager Torey Lovullo, who suddenly is drawing the ire of their fan base with their recent struggles. They dropped to a record of 28 wins, 31 losses after losing 9 of their last 11 games entering the week. These are very challenging times, I'm not going to lie about that, Lovullo said. We're in a huge grind, every single one of us. We are a really good baseball team, and we should not be 3 games under 500, unquote. The Diamondbacks' pitching and sloppy defense have been the culprits. They scored 6 or more runs 24 times this season, but have lost a major league-leading 11 of those games, including 3 games in which they scored 11 runs. And in other baseball news, Dodgers shortstop Mookie Betts, who broke his toe walking to the bathroom at his home last week, is expected to return to the lineup this week. There's been no temptation to move him back to right field as the Dodgers did a year ago. Quote, he's a major league shortstop on a championship club, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts told reporters. He looks like a major league shortstop right now, where last year there were many times I didn't feel that way, unquote. And Atlanta's pitching ace Chris Sale recorded his 2,500th strikeout, faster than any pitcher in history, accomplishing the feat in 2,026 innings, eclipsing Hall of Famer Randy Johnson, who achieved the milestone in 2,107 innings. Chris Sale idolized Randy Johnson growing up and still cherishes the text message that he received from Johnson last winter when he won the Cy Young Award. And a record-setting slugger is set for his major league debut. Power-hitting prospect Jacques Caglione was set to make his major league debut with the Kansas City Royals. The number 6 overall pick in the 2024 Major League Draft, who starred collegiately at Florida, was officially promoted on June the 2nd after just 79 games in the minors. The left-handed slugger is a natural first baseman, but he has seen time in the minors this season in the outfield, an area where the Royals have been among the least productive in the major leagues. But what makes Caglione, age 22, special is his elite raw power. Caglione posted an impressive 322 batting average and 593 slugging percentage, with 15 homers in 38 games this year at Class AA Northwest Arkansas, and 12 with Class AAA Omaha. With his tremendous bat speed and elite exit velocity, Caglione's home runs are often of the highlight reel variety. Caglione was expected to make his Royals debut on June the 3rd in St. Louis after Sports Weekly went to press. When he does, he will become the team's first hitter to reach the majors within 1 year of being drafted since Bo Jackson in 1986. And from baseball news, let's turn now to some horse racing news, specifically the Belmont Stakes, where the headline reads, "The first two winners are back." Preakness winner Journalism was made the 8-5 morning line favorite for the Belmont Stakes on June the 7th at Saratoga Racecourse in Saratoga Springs, New York. Journalism drew the number 7 post on June the 2nd in a field of 8 for the $2 million Grade 1 Belmont, the final leg of the Triple Crown. Post time for the Belmont is set for 4:04 p.m. Pacific Time. The race will be televised by Fox. The Belmont will be a rematch between Kentucky Derby winner Sovereignty and Journalism. After beating Journalism by 1.5 lengths in the Kentucky Derby, Sovereignty skipped the Preakness. Sovereignty is the 2-1 second choice in the Belmont morning line. Journalism will be the only horse among the Belmont field that has competed in all three Triple Crown races. The Belmont is being contested at Saratoga for the second straight year because of renovations at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York. Because of the change, the race is being run at 1.25 miles instead of the traditional 1.5 miles at Belmont Park. The race is scheduled to return to the new Belmont Park in 2026. And again, this feature is headlined, "The First Two Winners Are Back at the Belmont Stakes," coming up this weekend at 4 p.m. Pacific Time this Saturday. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.